You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me in the back of an Uber, in which we are being recorded via dash cam, is my friend Mike Lieboff. And Mike, are we going to talk some shit about the coaches today? Probably not, but I'm kind of wondering if we are.
I think if that happened to the Islanders, I wish it would have happened during the Scott Gordon or Steve Sterling era. That's what I was thinking, because I know people were like, oh, I wonder what they would have said about Capuano. Wait, but I think we probably had a good idea, but I think I don't even know if anybody knew who Steve Sterling was. So,
right. You know. Who's this old man that keeps coming in and blowing his whistle? Oh, wait, that's the coach? I haven't been paying attention to him for the last season and a half. I think had that happened during the Capuano era, we would have gotten probably some sick impersonation of him. Like, I could see Kyle Oposo just coming in and just having like the funniest Capuano impersonation.
Yeah.
And just like cracking everybody up and saying stupid stuff. But the thing is, like, it would have been funny, because I think Cappy would have like appreciated the joke. I think he would have been in on it and thought it was the Absolutely. Funniest thing ever. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it would have been a lot less malicious if it was during Capuano. I think they would really kind of just be like ragging on him. We're laughing with you kind of thing. Not at you, Jack.
I was talking with a friend of mine at work, my friend Paul, who's an Islanders fan too. And I was saying, you know, he was like, what the heck with the Senators thing? And we were just talking about it. I'm like, you know, the thing is, like, you know, the Senators have had a rough go of it, and they're kind of like the Islanders of Canada. Like, they do this, a lot of the same problems that the Islanders have, the Senators have. But, you know, because it's the Senators and because it's a Canadian team, it's all seen like, this is so terrible. Oh, won't somebody help this poor team pull out of its funk and establish itself? Meanwhile, when it's the Islanders, it's like, oh, the hell with those guys. They suck, you know? So it's funny that, you know, a lot of it's like, well, what can they do legally? And you know, this is such a, you know, if you feel bad for the players. And meanwhile, if it was the Islanders, man, this would have been like,
This team, it's a circus. We got to move it. Here are the three locations that can benefit the most from the Islanders' latest drama.
This never would have happened if they played in Quebec, you know, like that. So, but if you don't know what we're talking about, by the way, definitely Google Ottawa Senators and Uber, and it'll be very clear very quickly what is going on.
I think my favorite, like, I'm too big for this, you know, I'll be the bigger person tweet was from Elliot Friedman, when he talked about the invasion of privacy is, you know, disgusting or whatever. And like, all right, man, like, let's watch Hockey Night in Canada this Saturday, where you break this thing down in 31 thoughts. So
it was already in 31 thoughts. So there you go.
There you go. But
yeah. Now, I love how they treat the Senators with, I mean, and not the fans, because the fans, I think, kind of get it. Even Senators fans. If I was still on Twitter, one of my favorite follows is Bonk's Mullet, is probably the funniest Sens fan on Twitter, but I think they kind of get their status. But you know, the media definitely treats the Senators with kid gloves, despite doing a lot of the same dumb things that the Islanders do. And actually, the Senators have had a rough go of it now for this last 6 months, so this is just when you really look back at it, it's kind of silly, but at the same time, it's also hilarious. But let's that's enough about the Senators. Let's talk about the Islanders, who have had an interesting go of it the last week or so too. So exactly 7 days ago, you and I sat here and we talked about a game they had just – actually, the Islanders had just finished a stretch where they won three games in a row, all on the road in Philadelphia, in Carolina, and then in Pittsburgh. And they were about to play Pittsburgh again in Brooklyn a night later. And I didn't go back and listen to it. I can't imagine either of us were too confident about the outcome, feeling that the Islanders didn't play poorly in Pittsburgh, but they definitely played poorly in the first period, straightened themselves out and came away with a 6-3 victory that was very satisfying. And we thought, well, that probably won't happen twice. Well, it shows how much we know, because I think they played one of their better games of the season in that game against the Penguins in Brooklyn. They ended up kind of winning in a shootout, but I don't think that was indicative of how well the Islanders played in that game. I mean, did you think that they played pretty well, or am I just like kind of remembering?
Yeah, no, a week ago? I've thought about that game caused me to went out and walked Jimmy the dog for like an hour and was just smiling the whole time. It was like, sometimes when you walk the dog, it's a chore. Sometimes like you're in such a good mood that you just want to go out forever. And I was just thinking about that game and that game, it made me so happy more than anything, just to get that win. They thought they played well, but they also beat a better team twice in a row, playing the style that they're going to be kind of playing. So it's worked twice. It worked twice in a row, and Thomas Greiss's poke check was like, good guy. Like that was poetry.
That's a poster moment right there that will live in infamy. In overtime against Sidney Crosby on a breakaway, just the timing of that is astonishing to me. Just like thinking about how he managed to pull that off, just to get it timed right. I mean, if he tried that probably 10 more times, I think 9 times out of that 10, Crosby would just pull the puck away and score into an empty net, essentially. But that one time, it worked, and it was awesome. It was hilarious.
Yeah, if that didn't go well, everybody would be tweeting, well, you should probably never do that against Sidney Crosby, you know? Like, I'd keep that sword in its sheath there, Thomas, but instead, that was honestly like the Dublowitz poke check against the Devils was great, and he had a couple poke checks like in that run that were awesome, but they were much more telegraphed. I would say that thing came out of nowhere. I think
nobody expected that. And actually, that reminds me, I meant to go back and listen to the the Pittsburgh feed of that if I can somewhere, just like find out how to get the call of that, because Brendan Burke's call was great, but obviously he was calling it for the Islanders. I want to hear how the Root Sports guys called that. But
probably would have said it was a disgrace.
Yeah, it's probably a penalty or something like that. So the Islanders, you know, again, they wanted a shootout, but I think most people would agree that they played really, really well. So that ran the streak to 4 games, 4 straight wins, and then they played again on Saturday against the Devils. I got to confess, I didn't actually watch the game until the next day. I kind of watched a condensed version. I was at a Halloween party that night. My wife and I were Star-Lord and Gamora from Guardians of the Galaxy, so people liked it. She was painted in green. I was not, so I actually made out. I just had guns on my hips that kept falling down for the magnets that wouldn't hold. But they played the New Jersey Devils on alumni night. We'll talk about that in a little bit as well. Won by shutout. The Devils, once again, you know, it's kind of a pattern. Our friend Carrie Haber wrote a whole thing about this, Lighthouse Hockey this week, about how the Islanders really aren't very good in first periods, and that Devils game was no exception. They weren't that great in the first period, but afterwards they didn't really give the Devils much, especially on 5-on-5, and there weren't a whole lot of dangerous chances, and Thomas Greiss was great, spelling Robin Lehner, who had kind of gotten hurt a little bit in that first Penguins game in Pittsburgh, and came away with a 3-0 victory on alumni night, and you couldn't really ask for anything more at that point. 5 straight wins, they were first place in the division, and everything was really looking up. Did you watch the game? What did you think of that one?
Yeah, that was the one I've probably seen the least of, actually. And I'm kind of pissed because I didn't realize it was alumni night. And I thought last year the Islanders made such a big deal about bringing these guys in, and like, you know, everybody is, you know, who ever wore the jerseys coming can come back, like doesn't matter, like Peter Mika came again,
he was there again.
They need to make him like the official ambassador of alumni night or something. I watched like the Islanders put a little video up, and I got a couple snapshots, one of Bruno Gervais and one of Radek Martinek in the back of like a double decker sightseeing truck bus, and he's got a poncho on and
yeah, Bob Nystrom too had a poncho on. I agree with you. I think they made less of a big deal about it this year than last year. I feel a little bad because I feel like the guys who I recognize by face has gotten less and less. But then it turns out that a lot of guys were there who are like Peter Mika types. Like they just hadn't, they didn't really have great long careers with the Islanders. One guy, oh man, if I can remember his name, the Islanders actually wrote a whole story about him on their website. He was like, he had only ever suited up as a backup goalie and he had never played for them.
Oh my God.
And, he wanted to, they extended the invitation and he wanted to come and there he was. And it was like, okay. But, Pierre Turgeon was there and Mick Vokoda. Yeah, like you said, a couple. Oh, and Chico Resch was there. And I got to tell you, Chico is looking very svelte these days. And, I don't know if he's on like a health regimen or he's, you know, kind of taking care of himself, but I guess that now that he's not doing Devils games anymore, he's kind of laying off those premium Italian sausages and he's kind of getting back into shape. I'm like, wow, Chico looks really good. So good for him.
I think I saw Brian Berard.
Brian Berard. Oh, yeah. Martinek was definitely there. And I was like, oh, boy, I hope that doesn't mean he's going to sign a contract. But and somebody else mentioned, too, that they kind of gave the alumni some crappy seats at Barclays for that game. They didn't have them in a suite, or at least, I don't know, for a little while.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, I hope they're not obstructed view seats, too. Like, yeah, that they're in that, like, weird corner area.
Right. Which, you know, kind of puts them in full view of the whole place, which is nice. But at the same time, like, these guys are your VIPs. They probably should sit in a box. But, again, as we've said before, we're not going to go into it again. I don't think it's going to be a problem coming up for next year and probably the year after and stuff.
We got to say Kenny Johnson too.
Oh yeah, Kenny Johnson was there. Yeah, good to see him
there
too.
That was the one. That was seeing Johnson and Yashin, and especially because Yashin was wearing his turtleneck. That was great.
Yeah, that's a few people pointed that out. Yeah, good on Yashin for wearing the turtleneck, and yeah, it's definitely good to see Kenny looking healthy and taking part in that kind of stuff because he had some real health problems for a while there, and it's good to see him back up and around and hanging out in Brooklyn. And again, I think next year, and then obviously moving into Belmont, you'll start seeing them get even bigger and bigger. And I think this is kind of like John Ledecky's baby now a little bit. You know, I mean, Lou handles, I guess, the hockey stuff now, and this is probably John Ledecky's big thing. And he really, you know, they do a good job. And they take him on a tour of the city, and it's pretty cool. It's weird seeing Bobby Nystrom in a poncho, because you would think that the rain would be afraid of Bobby Nystrom. But I guess he needs a poncho just like everybody else. But, so that night, man, couldn't have gone better. Like, shutout, first place, alumni's in the house. Everything's great. And then Monday, and I said it last week, and I will say it until the end of time, I hate playing the Montreal Canadiens. That team, the Leafs have an incredibly irritating media and fan base. But, like, I feel like it's irritating because there's, like, a sense of, like, an inferiority complex from people in Toronto. Like, they want to be like a big time sports city like we have here in America, but they're just never going to be viewed that way. And so it's kind of this one dynamic. But with Montreal, man, it's just, I call it delusional condescension. Like, it's just me. I know it's me. It's like a psychological problem. But, like, I just, they're making fun of the attendance. They're talking about, you know, this. And it's just like, guys, really, like, we got to go through this every single time. And, you know, credit to the Habs. They played a hell of a game. They pretty much ran the Islanders out of their own building. The Islanders didn't have it. They lost in a shootout and should not have had any points, let alone the one that they took. The Islanders had a 3-1 lead, blew it. You knew they were going to blow it. They hadn't had their legs all night. And Barry Trotz, the best part of the game was when Barry Trotz comes into the postgame press conference and says, "We were awful. That was our worst game of the season. And yep, we need to be better." And he didn't even take any questions, just that we were awful. So that was that. I mean, what'd you think of that? That was a pretty hard game to watch. I did not enjoy it. I almost turned it off, actually, after the second period.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want to watch this anymore.
It was the shootout was kind of the right way for that to end. The Islanders didn't deserve a point, but just because the Islanders should have shot 100 shots in the shootout, they still wouldn't have scored because they didn't deserve the second point.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, and we talked about it a little bit last week. Like, these games are going to happen, and like you said, hearing that come out of Barry Trotz's mouth instead of saying, we had a couple passengers or whatever, was great. Yeah. So that's the silver lining I got there, and obviously the Islanders weren't going to win 70 games in a row. So I mean, they got a point in a game they shouldn't have. So that's a mark of a good sign, of a good thing to come, I guess.
I would think so. Yeah, Thomas Greiss, by the way, was the only Islander who actually earned his money in that game. He was really, really good. And I guess Casey Zekas had two goals, which is always cool to see. But, yeah, that was a bad game. And I thought about that, too, like the whole sort of difference between Trotz and Capuano slash Wade. And, yeah, there's no, like, passengers. There's no battle level, that kind of thing. He just came out and said they were awful. And I think, I mean, you know, you'd have to ask Barry Trotz this, but I wonder if that was sort of like a kind of, you know, we play as a team and we win as a team and lose as a team mentality. Like, he could have said, yeah, Thomas Greiss was good and, you know, this guy was pretty good and this guy's okay, but he didn't do that. He just came out and said, we stunk. And that is, you never would have heard a previous coach of the Islanders say that. And just, you know, we were like, remember that when the Brock Nelson pick your shit up conversation happened, it was like, yeah. Whoa, Cappy said, yeah. What? He never calls these guys out. And here's Trotz in like his, you know, whatever 10th or 11th game as an Islanders coach saying, these guys were terrible and we need to be better about it. And then he gave them the next day off. They flew down and they've been practicing today. Jordan Eberle missed practice with a maintenance day. He should be okay to go on Thursday when you're probably listening to the day you're probably listening to this, when they have a game in Tampa. So we'll have to see how that works out. Matt Martin is still hurt. And so that game, the other thing about that game, yeah, like you said, I mean, they got a point. They weren't going to win them all. They had just won five in a row, so good for them. But, you know, the worst part about that game is that now they got to go down and play in Tampa, who's arguably the best team in the league right now. And, you know, if Pittsburgh was a challenge and, you know, the Hurricanes were a challenge and even the Devils were a bit of a challenge, this Tampa team represents a challenge even steeper than any of those challenges. So not a great way you want to go into. You don't want to go into one of those games having lost. But then again, the last time they lost was against the Panthers, and they kind of reeled off five straight wins after that. So I don't know.
Right.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. It's funny. Last year, the Islanders played the Lightning earlier in the year, like in November-ish. And they were kind of coming off a similar stretch. They might not have been on like a winning streak like they were, but they were playing well, and then they beat Tampa. And it was kind of like, whoa, maybe this team can actually – you know, do something, and then it all went to hell. But I'm looking forward to these games against. I'm not too scared. I think that was like the big thing I took away from that second Penguins win was like, I'm not that scared. Not that I'm not scared of Tampa, but I'm not that scared of these games because I think that the Islanders under Trotz are going to be in it against everybody, or at least have a puncher's chance against these teams. Like, so I'm not terrified of going there. Do I think they're going to win? No. They're pretty heavy underdogs in the betting market, too. So it's just like it's not, you know, the Islanders are being given like a 36% chance, 35% chance of winning. So I would agree with that. But that also means that they can do it. And I'm more looking forward to this than I'm fear of I don't want to watch, which is definitely where I was for. Or I usually am as an Islander fan for most of my life.
Yeah. I think that Trotz will have them prepared, and I think that they're, you know, not having their legs for the Habs game will serve as a lesson to them that they can't, you know, they have. And, you know, one question somebody, I forget the exact wording of the question, but, you know, after a couple of times, Trotz was like, we weren't good, we were awful, we didn't have our legs, and we never got back. Somebody posed some kind of question like, well, like, what did you do to help them get their legs back? And he was like, you know, we talked to them after each period about, you know, we can still win this. And, you know, we have a gift here. They had that lead and then they had another lead. But it just didn't register. So there's something that's going to have to come from them. And, you know, I get back to something we said a few weeks ago about when Trotz talks about accountability, what he means is that it sounds like what he means is that the players being accountable to themselves and picking each other up and kind of getting on each other in situations like that where, you know, it's not about the coaches. The coaches can yell and scream. And I mean, Doug Weight, even when he was an assistant coach, like that was his job, was to peel paint off the walls in the locker room after, you know, they would lay an egg after their first period or something like that. So the coaches can do that, but ultimately the players have to be the ones to go out and play. And I guess, you know, what he's saying is that nobody really kind of stepped up and did that. And maybe we'll see that again. So, you know, it's definitely going to be their biggest test of the season for sure. I still have flashbacks to those terrible games against Tampa that they played a couple of years ago where they just got, not last season, but the season before, where they just got absolutely demolished in embarrassing fashion and just reminded about the difference between these two teams, even though they had just played in the playoffs the year before. So I really hope that doesn't happen again, and I don't think it will. But this is going to be a tough one. And then two nights later, they play in Florida against the Panthers. And it's funny because that game I expect the Islanders to play very well in, considering how poorly they played against the Panthers in Brooklyn. I really expect them to play well in that game. And if they don't, I'll be pretty disappointed. But again, I think Trotz has kind of drilled into them that like you can't take any night off. You have to play our structure with the full energy every game or else you're going to lose, basically.
Yeah, and I think for him, too, it might be a little bit of an adjustment coming from a team like Washington who, yeah, they could, frankly, take a night off. They might not win, but they had the talent to take a night off and then make up for it the next game by just imposing their talent on whatever poor team came into the building. Right. And I think that message, too, like, yeah, you guys won five in a row and you took a night off, but come November and December, we're going to go through a rut because you guys aren't very good. I don't know if you've been reading that, but about that, but yeah, it's true. A lot of you guys aren't great hockey players. So, I think it'll be a little bit of an adjustment for him too. But I think he's definitely prepared for that. And I also want to say just before I forget that, dude, Josh Bailey has been so good this season.
Yeah.
And that's like another takeaway, I think, from the games, the stretch of games that we just saw.
Yeah. It's, there's something when he retires and in a number of years, I mean, it could be another 10 years because the guy, he's still only like 28 years old, right? So I mean, he's still got a long time to keep on playing. But I'm just really fascinated about what's kind of gone on because this is a different player than we're used to seeing. Like this is a guy who's assertive, he's confident in his ability, and he's out there to make stuff happen. And I can't say that's always been the case with Josh Bailey. I've never been myself like a Bailey nope. hater. But he's always sort of been like, yeah, okay, he's all right. And, you know, I mean, I've always thought, you know, on a championship team, he'd be a perfectly fine third line player. Well, you know, the Islanders never got that team and he was never a third line player because they always had him playing on the top couple of lines. But it took a long time for him to get to this point where he's just, again, he's just an everyday contributor. And that is almost astonishing to me.
and I always say to people when we talk Josh Bailey, which is all the time, if you know my life, I remember the game that I think, you know, I just saw him click on for the first time. It was that lockout shortened year. Him and Oposa were kind of struggling. And then the same game against the Leafs, they both had pretty good games. It was at home at the Coliseum. And I just watched those two guys won the game for the Islanders. And I'm not saying that's like, you know, been the moment where he took off, but since that kind of time, he's just gotten better and better and better, and to the point that this season, like you're saying, he's assertive. And I think that's probably the thing that I haven't like, what's so different about him? It's so impressive but so different, and I think assertive is the right word. Like he is, I'd be really afraid to be playing against him. You might not even know who he is. You might just be like, yeah, this guy's been on the Islanders for a while. I don't really think there's nothing too like dynamic about his game, but he is like the way he's shooting too. I mean, he's just like unleashing these howitzers once a game. I'm like, all right, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah. I mean, he on the power play, he's the shooter. Like go figure. How is that even possible? Like how do we even get to this point? And clearly the first power play is set up so that he's shooting, you know, from getting passes from Barzal and shooting them. And it's just that's not a player that we expected to see anytime. And the funny thing is now you got me thinking, like if this continues, and I mean, hopefully it does. But I mean, last year, him making the All-Star team was cool. You know, don't get me wrong. As an Islanders fan, it's cool to see they had two All-Stars last year. And like, it was like, hey, good for him. Like, but you thought it was an anomaly. Like it wasn't something that, you know, you took like, yeah, this is the start of something. Like he could potentially make two All-Star teams back to back. Like that's crazy. And then at that point it stops being a novelty and it becomes sort of like, yeah, this guy's an All-Star. And it's just, you have to adjust your brain. Josh Bailey, All-Star. Josh Bailey, two-time All-Star. You're like, how is that possible? But I mean, good for him. And you know what part of the problem is too? And Arthur Staple alluded to this in a recent article. I can't remember which one it was, but he'll never credit himself. He always credits other people. Josh Bailey. And that's the thing. He's so quiet. Yep. He's never on social media. He's never like interviewed anywhere. And so part of it is just like, you know, he never speaks. So why would we ever think about him? But here he is. Yeah. He's been arguably the best non-goalie player they've had. It's either him or Lee, basically.
Yeah. I think him and then Nelson in gets a bronze medal, which is kind of really screwing everything up, but in my noggin. But the, I couldn't. He was part of the reason I was smiling so much after the second win over the Penguins. Like, the dude is just playing so well, and like you said, he's got like this quiet, like you could tell he knows, like what he means to the kind of the franchise now. Like, he is the last remaining player from that core, basically.
Yeah,
and he's like our last hope at a one jersey guy for this generation, and I really hope he is. Like, if Josh Bailey ends up being the guy who has the 18 year only with the Islanders career, like, what, God, yeah. you really just have no idea in this sport, which is great. See, now God, love him.
This is gonna be a whole thing, because, you know, most of the one jersey guys are like, you know, superstars, Stanley Cup winners, that kind of thing. Then you get guys like Shane Doan, who is like the face of the franchise out in the for the Coyotes. And, you know, I mean, he went to a bunch of All-Star games too. I don't know if Bailey necessarily is like that, because he was never the face of the franchise, never like, this is our guy we're going to build around, and then build around him. So I don't know. Like, there's got to be examples of people that are like, you know, I don't want to say the word plugger, because that's not exactly accurate either, but guys who were just there a long time and with one team, you know, like a, I don't know, is Darren Helm count? Like, I'm thinking of a lot of Red Wings, like Darren McCarty. Was he one of those guys? Did he ever play for another team? I don't think he did.
Yeah, he played for the Flames.
Oh, he did? Oh, right,
yeah. Well, there goes that. But I think Bailey's maybe like a little bit better than those guys. But the point is, like, completely under the radar, right. Kind of not. They're more likely to score 10 goals a season consistently than they were to 40.
Right. Yeah. But yet he just stayed with the same team for his entire career. Like, that would be completely.
He would be the biggest anomaly, one jersey guy ever, of guys who played like 15 plus if he got there.
Right. And, you know, like modern era guys, because I'm sure that, you know, there's a ton of guys like that from the original 60 era that we don't know. Stan Fischler would know them, and he'd be like, oh, yeah, this guy, whatever. Like, he played for the Red Wings for 20 years. Be like, who? Well, yeah, it's because it was like 1932 to 1952. Like, that would be crazy. But anyway. But yeah, he's definitely been a key part of the resurgence, and the goalies have, obviously, as well.
Yeah. Can't say enough about those two.
No, Leonard apparently is going to start in Tampa, which makes sense. He's had a couple of games to rest whatever ailed him after that Penguins game. So I'm looking forward to that, and I have a lot of faith in him, and he'll be good. Couple of guys struggling though. Nick Leddy. I mean, I don't know what the story is there. Matt Barzell 5-on-5 is kind of struggling a little bit, which is funny considering that he's got, like, you know, whatever, 15 assists in 12 games or something like that. Trotz wants him to go more north-south instead of east-west. Okay, like, let's get that happening, but he's going to have to, I think, break some habits that really worked for him last year. And
yeah,
it's concerning for sure. I think he'll straighten it out. I think he's smart enough to straighten it out, and I think Trotz will get it straightened out. But, you know, right now, if you're looking for areas that concern, that is definitely it. And hopefully they can fix that. Tomorrow night would be a great – Thursday night would be a great time to fix it. But they're definitely going to have to get him straightened out. And Leddy too, because
– Yeah, you can definitely see with Barzal that people kind of know what's coming a little bit. He's maybe a little predictable, but that is a very fixable thing. So once he figures out that they've figured out what he's going to do, it – and he adds like a little bit more of like the unpredictability, like McDavid's got it for sure. Like you just don't know what like his maneuver is going to be every shift, McDavid, I would say. So once Barzal figures out that he needs to kind of change up his arsenal every now and then, he'll be fine. Leddy, I'm genuinely concerned about, because I thought he had a good game against the Penguins for the second game. As the Penguins, and then he was bad against the Canadiens. Like,
yeah, and everybody was, but when he's bad, it's really noticeable, and he just looks kind of lost out there. One thing I agree with you what you're saying about Barzell, and I wonder if like the what might fix him, and of course I'm not a hockey coach, so I don't know, but I wonder if being more predictable would actually help him in this situation, like as in not do the dipsy doodles and stuff and just like, again, play the way Trotz wants you to play, north-south. First of all, shoot the puck more, which everybody says he's got to do, and he definitely does. But like, I wonder if that almost like kind of like a play action pass a little bit, like you establish this run and then all of a sudden you start bombing the ball all over the place. I wonder if that would work too. Whereas like if he established himself as kind of just a straight ahead player for a few games and people would kind of back off a little bit, and then he could go around and do his things again that he did last year. I don't know if that would work, but yeah, no, I think he's definitely got to change stuff up. And, you know, I hate the word struggling because it implies that he's not doing stuff out there. He is. He's just also turning the puck over and not creating offense and cycling the puck the way he kind of needs to. And unfortunately, that's also harming Anthony Beauvillier, who is another guy who's hasn't really been, kind of on track this season. So
he started slow last year, but it did take him a little while to like catch fire. Then when he did, it was
well, complete... sent him out of the minors.
Yes, right. Yeah. So once he, like, I think maybe that's the other thing too, is maybe, you know, some of these guys just have a habit of doing that out of the gates.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and we have to remember too, that this is a brand new coaching staff. That's only like, this is their 12th game in charge. So I think that there's a lot of leeway there that
that's
we can kind of give them and have them figure it out. And you know, a slump is going to happen. Like, we've been talking a lot about how they're sort of outplaying their bad metrics and a crash is going to happen. I don't know if it'll necessarily be a total crash of epic proportions. I hope it obviously isn't. But, I mean, slumps happen all the time. When we talked the last time, that the Flyers were, you know, just completely falling apart. Their coach was, you know, people were demanding the coach be fired and everything. And since then, I think they've won like 4 or 5 in a row. The Rangers have won 4 and 5 in a row. The Penguins have lost a couple in a row, you know, including games to the Islanders. So, you know, things happen. And like at some point, they are going to go through a slump and they're going to have to figure out how to get out of it. And it's just like you want player, you know, when you look at a player like Matt Barzell, who's maybe not playing as well as you hoped he would or thought he would, you would think that, you know, him straightening out would curtail or at least shorten those slumps. And I'm actually kind of looking forward. I'm not looking forward to them going into a slump, but I am looking forward to seeing what happens when they do, because I think one big thing that Trotz will have over the other coaches who he replaced is he's not going to let them linger. Like, I don't think we're going to see a November where they go winless again, or like a 7-game losing streak, which seemed to happen every single season. I think he's more conscious of the fact that they got to fix those things right away. So I'm kind of interested to see how that happens. Again, I don't hope it doesn't, but I kind of interested to see how that goes with those guys, and hopefully he can straighten them out. So let's talk about some other young Islanders. The Sound Tigers won a game this afternoon, 10:30 a.m. game. Michael Fornabio loves those games, as he said on on Twitter. Michael Dacol, they beat up on, was it Binghamton? I think they won like 7-2 or 7-3. Michael Dacol had another goal. He's got 7 this year. Kiefer Bellows had another goal. He's got a couple in his last couple of games. And Josh Hosang, if I remember correctly, is now tied for the league in the AHL in assists. I think that might be correct.
Jesus.
Yeah, but and he's responded after that article we talked about last time. He basically came out and said he's elevated his play as an apology to the organization. He felt his words were misrepresented and didn't, you know, fully accurately represent what he thinks, and he's turned it on. And you know what? If that's what it takes, hey man, that's what it takes. I'll take it.
Yeah, thanks, Brett Sirgalis.
He may have just saved Josh Hosang's Islanders career, but you know, he's got to keep it up, and he's got to keep up the play and keep, you know, producing like that. And so far, I mean, things have been pretty good. It's hard to get a read on the Sound Tigers because we're here and we don't, you know, we follow them kind of from afar. Noel, our colleague at Lighthouse Hockey, our friend, he put up an interview with Michael Dacol today, just prior to that game, that was really insightful and talked about kind of what he's looked at and how he kind of bulked up this summer. And, you know, he didn't want to use the phrase last chance, obviously, but he definitely had a long time to think about what happened last year and where he was as a player, and put in a lot of work this summer. And so far, so good. It's paid off really well. And, you know, if he can become an asset for this team, It's unfortunate that he's not like the fastest skater out there, because they could really use somebody like that. But you know, he could definitely be an asset for this team going forward, and that would be another helpful thing, and maybe get another young player in here to augment, you know, the Barzell and Beauvillier and the guys like that, because they can really use all the scoring punch they can, and guys that can cycle and move the puck are, you know, you can't have enough of those guys. And I don't know where he would play right now, but as long as he's doing it in the AHL, keep doing it. You know, don't stop.
Yeah. So. Him panning out, like if he's even remotely contributing to this team, would be really more surprising than anything, I think. than you know, the start to the season. It's just everybody gave up with him, not just me, you, and Islander fans, and probably the organization, but like prospect writers, like, nope, they were all like, yeah, he's nothing at this point, you know. Yeah. it's basically a cut bait season contract with that. Yeah. So it's a good story. It's cool.
No, it is. Well, Noel, like right off the bat in his story, was like, you know, thanks to Kiefer Bellows and Oliver Wahlstrom, like we all kind of forgot about Michael Dalcolle, but here he is. And again, you know, Arthur Staple had a Q&A on The Athletic today, and you know, he brought up a good point. Like, you know, everybody's like, oh, when is he coming up? When can they call him up? And he's like, you know what? I think they'd rather have him in the AHL sort of dominating and continuing to play down there like this. And, you know, once it gets to the point where it's half a season's gone by and he's continued to play like this the entire time, then we could talk about maybe calling him up. But, you know, for right now, everything, just let him do his thing and keep doing it. Same with Hosang, I guess. Just let them do their thing and do it for a long time, and do it to the point where you force them to give you a look and maybe call you up. So that's pretty cool. The Worcester Railers, unfortunately, have lost 5 games in a row. So that's bad. They really should try and fix that. Speaking of Islanders farmhands, when this broke, the first person I wanted to talk to was you, because I feel like you have a unique insight into something like this happening that a lot of us won't. But on Tuesday, the Blackhawks fired Joel Quenneville, winner of 3 Stanley Cups, winningest coach in their history, second winningest coach in NHL history. You know, I don't think it was surprising, but I don't think it was shocking, because, I mean, these kinds of things happen, and the Blackhawks weren't that good this year, and they haven't been good the last couple of years, really. And so you kind of figured the time was going to come. But what's shocking was they replaced him with a name that I hadn't heard in years and had to read the tweet 3 times to understand what was actually happening. Jeremy Colleton, who is like was a Sound Tiger for 10 years, all whatever, like 30 or 40 of his NHL games, I think he played 54 NHL games, all with the Islanders, 3 goals, 3 assists. And I could have swore this guy was like still playing in the Czech League or something. I didn't think for a minute that he was here in this continent. But not only was he coaching he was coaching the Blackhawks AHL team, and now he's coaching the friggin' Chicago Blackhawks. That's just bizarre. This guy who was an Islanders farmhand forever is now coaching the Blackhawks? What?
It like you said, seeing that tweet, it was, I wanted to grab, you know, Pierre LeBrun or whoever. I wanted to shake his ankles and be like, you don't understand what this is doing to us. This is crazy.
Yeah.
This is it's so hard to wrap as an Islander fan to wrap your head around that. First of all, he's 33,
right,
which just lends itself to your point of he's, you know, you think he'd still be playing somewhere. Yeah. Like his Islander-ness was, he was part of that like bad group of when the Islanders really needed to replenish their farm system. And you heard about it especially from Snow. And he was basically always the, you know, we do have Jeremy Colleton, who's a promising young player. And like, so they had, and then also the craziest thing is, so I see this tweet about that, and then the tweet like directly under it in the thread is from Colleton, which I stared at for a very long time to try to let it compute. And then right above that was the Sound Tigers congratulating all-time leading scorer,
right,
Jeremy Colleton. Jeremy Colleton, how is he the all-time leading scorer for the Bridgeport Sound Tigers?
he this is just a, is. Yeah.
It's just This is all like.
So I have his Hockey DB page up right now because this is the one that has all the minor league teams on it and stuff. So yeah, second round pick, 58th overall in the 2003 draft by the Islanders. So that predates Snow, but yeah, he had 21 goals one in 05-06 for the Sound Tigers, then 10, then 9, then 8, then 18, then 11. So. The Sound Tigers haven't been around that long, so I can kind of see why he's their leading scorer. But, yeah, he had one goal for the Islanders in 2005-2006, and then he had to wait until 2010-2011 to get two more. And those are his three NHL goals. He did spend some time in Europe. But, yeah, it's just, you know, names sometimes can pop up, and you, again, you haven't heard of them in forever. And, you know, Colleton to me is one of those guys who just I never kind of thought that he was going to make it. He was just always he was always a name on the Sound Tigers roster, and he would chip in a goal every once in a while. Guys like Rhett Rakshani, who came around a little bit later.
Rhett Rakshani, who said that on Twitter that Jeremy Colleton was the smartest player he's ever played with.
Yeah.
Which reminded me that I was still following Rhett Rakshani.
there was another guy, too, who I can't remember now, who was sort of part of that group that was always.
It was like.
Yeah, Aaron Ness and oh man, who was the other guy? The defenseman. I can't remember his name now. Jesse Uwensu was another one.
Yeah.
Oh, John Sim. Yeah, who's? Yeah, John Sim, Blake Como, Jack Hillen. That was the guy. Jack Hillen. Yeah, I'm thinking of. Yeah,
I loved him. I remember Jack Hillen, who chose to sign with the Islanders in that like weird college player signing stage at the end of the season because the Islanders like we'll let you play in our last two games of the season, and then he did. And then he always got peppered with shots, Jack Hillen, like in the face.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Wow. Yeah. I just randomly clicked on the 2008-2009 Bridgeport Sound Tigers roster. Head coach Jack Capuano. They went 49 and no, that's not right. That can't be right. They couldn't have won 49 games. They couldn't have went 49. Oh, yeah, 49-23-8 that one season. Wow. Yeah. That's a great season. And they played six goalies that year, including Jan Denis, Nathan Lawson, Peter Menino. These are all like blasts from the past. Oh, Michael Haley was on that team. Joe Recklitz, the Wrecker, was on that team.
Is Mitch Fritz there?
Yeah, I think I just saw him. Yeah, there he is. Yeah, Mitch Fritz.
Jesus.
Zero goals, two assists in 36 games, 58 penalty minutes.
I can't visualize the goal, but I'm pretty sure Colleton in his first season with the Islanders, like they weren't going to make the playoffs, so they had that they had traded Sopel and Mark Parrish, which was like one of the first fire sales the Islanders had in a while because they had made the playoffs in the lockout, and I was really upset because I liked those guys, and they traded them for Grebeshkov and Tambellini. And I remember going to the game, to games late in that season and being, you know, watching those two, Robert Nilsson and Bergenheim, and just being like,
yeah, and then another one,
and Colleton was like kind of the lunch pailer, smart. He was like the Josh Bailey of that crew. Like he was supposed to be Josh Bailey, like smart player with not the most skill, but like with perfect two way center kind of guy.
Right.
And then he wasn't good enough.
Yeah, but it's funny because you mentioned the Rakshani tweet. Justin Bourne has talked about this too. But yeah, so here while to us, Jeremy Colleton is a guy who, you know, the Islanders drafted and then never really, you know, became an NHL player. He went to Sweden and played for a team and then became that team's coach and led them to what's the opposite of relegation? Promotion?
Promotion, yes.
To the next level. Sorry, folks, it's late. So he helped that team get promoted to the next level. That caught the attention of the Blackhawks. They brought him over to coach AHL Rockford, and they got his attention there too, and they played really well under him. And here he is now at the Chicago Blackhawks. So every player that's played with him talked about how smart he was. Bourne said that, you know, when he first met Colleton, he was so mature that he just assumed that he was older than Justin was. But no, lo and behold, Justin is older than Jeremy Colleton is. And he was like, what? This guy's younger than me? And he was a coach in the making even then, basically. You know, when two guys were coming up. So.
We just did it. We just didn't know it. We just didn't know it.
Right.
And this is going to sound strange too. I always, no matter if you had told me without, if you had brought up Jeremy Colleton to me, you know, 6 months ago, I would say, oh, Blackie Alberta native Jeremy Colleton. Because I, for some reason, like, and I remember Wyatt Smith, who was on those Islanders team, was he was from Thief River Falls, Minnesota. And like these really random sounding, yeah, funny sounding place. Like Blackie, Alberta sounds like the most Canadian, yeah, Western Canadian town. So I just always remembered.
Bobby Clark, Flin Flon, Alberta, Flin Flon, Manitoba, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
How do you forget a name like Flin Flon? Well, I mean, Clark Gillies from Moose Jaw and Chico Reich, both from Moose Jaw. So, I mean, yeah, those great kind of old timey Canadian names. Blackie Alberta. That's awesome.
Blackie Alberta. Yeah.
So congratulations to Jeremy Colleton
and to us
for enjoying this and to the Islanders. And here's the thing that's really going to blow your mind. Are you ready for this? You see, I don't know if a lot of people realize this. So yes, Jeremy Colleton, blast from the Islanders past, is now the Blackhawks coach. The guy who is now taking over his old job with Rockford is none other than Derek King. Another Islanders blast from the blast for the past. A guy we all remember very well. Obviously, Derek King was a pretty good player in, yeah, his day. But I was like, wait, what is happening right now? Why are the Blackhawks entrusting their future to two guys from the Islanders? Like, it's just
we're a coaching factory.
Yeah, I guess so. Who knew? Apparently, King was in line to maybe take over head coach of the Ice Hogs last season or two seasons ago. And he was passed over. They brought Colleton over and he was like, well, kind of disappointed, but then he worked with the guy and was like, I love working with this guy. So there was a good article with him on The Athletic today too. So I'm just stunned by this. I mean, who's next? Is
I know exactly who's next, because I remember hearing his name a little bit and being like, oh, I remember him too, and he's from that era too. It's Joel Bouchard, who's
he's coaching the Habs, he's coaching team right now.
Yep,
yeah,
yep, exactly,
yeah, right, yeah. But see, now it's funny, now he's called, I think he goes by Joel Bouchard now. I think the media call him that because, you know, again, he's not an Islander, so he's not Joel anymore. He's Joel. But yeah, no, he's coaching, I think, the Habs AHL team right now. So yeah, there you go. So wow. Who knew? Islanders coaching factory. There you go. Crazy. but yeah, that's definitely the weirdest thing to have happened. And good for them, you know. I mean, good for the Islanders that the weirdest thing that happened to them wasn't something completely disastrous. Man. But
yeah, that is just, it's still so strange.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Last note on former Islanders, because this has kind of been sitting in my craw for a couple of days. So Pierre LeBrun wrote an article about this week for The Athletic about Max Pacioretty and Erik Karlsson and John Tavares eventually returning to their old places. Now, Tavares' first game on Long Island isn't until February, but Pacioretty plays in Montreal on Saturday, I believe, and Carlson's first game as a San Jose Shark in Ottawa is coming up soon, too. And, you know, he talked about what the receptions would be like and talked to those three guys. I don't really know what he said about Pacioretty and Karlsson. Those guys got traded, so, I mean, there'll be a lot of cheers for them. Karlsson, I mean, if Karlsson comes back and he isn't cheered, considering what the Senators have been going through, that's very strange. I can't imagine he wouldn't be. But then they got to the Tavares part. And I don't want to say that Tavares is kind of out to lunch or that LeBrun was kind of hedging his bets and waffling a little bit, but that's exactly what I'm going to say, because I don't know what these guys are thinking. Tavares was like, well, I'm hoping that the reception is positive and everybody remembers the 9 years I spent there and how hard I worked. And LeBrun is like, well, you know, we'll have to see how the reception is. Maybe it depends on where the Islanders are in the standings relative to the Leafs. Guys, it's very simple. John is going to get booed a lot. We don't need to overthink this. We don't need to kind of get into, oh, maybe it'll be this. Maybe whether the Islanders are in first place or in last place, and the Leafs are in first place or in last place, or anywhere in the middle, it doesn't matter. That guy is going to be literally pilloried and burned in effigy from the minute his plane touches down in New York to the minute that plane leaves New York. If he gets in a cab with a guy who knows who he is, he's going to get harassed. He's going to get harassed walking to the stadium. He's going to get harassed if he walks his new teammates around his old neighborhood. What, we don't have to overthink this. He's going to get booed a lot. So yep. Just say
it. It was like, I think we'll all agree that the Athletic kind of is very, like any hockey media business model would be, like they're very Leafs skewed. Like they have like eight Leafs writers. Yeah. So, but like that was like, it almost read like a plant, like, right. And, the way that it came out, like a planted story, the fact that like Pierre LeBrun, who's like the third most connected writer in the world, in the hockey world, like basically served this up, like made it. It was like explain this to us in like the most G-rated version you can, and like you said, like the guy, it's literally he's going to be burned in effigy. And I'm not saying like there's going to be some stuff that goes on that you're going to be like, oh, that's, you know, kind of crossing the line. But that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen in the parking lot. Things are going to, you know, be thrown at the bus, whatever. It's going to be an ugly scene. And to put something out like this, where it kind of is like another instance of thinking we're a lot dumber than we are, is just going to add fuel. All that does is add fuel to the fire.
Yeah, no.
Like you don't think any Islander fan reading that wasn't like, all right, now I'm mad today.
The comments, to be fair, the comments were all like, this is stupid. He's going to get booed. Like, you know, one guy, the first comment that got all like the thumbs up was like, he's going to be booed more than any player has ever been booed ever anywhere, you know, or something like that. And he's right. And every comment below that was like, yeah, this isn't a no-brainer. He's going to get booed a lot. And I mean, the more I thought about it, the more I was like, why are we even lumping these three guys in together? Because the situations are totally different. I mean,
that's why I think it's kind of a planted story. Like, hey, look, guys, Pacioretty and Carlson are going to be revered.
Yeah.
Maybe like this, you guys are treating this guy unfair. Like,
Pacioretty has the same. He has the same agent as Tavares, doesn't he? Isn't he a Pat Brisson? Oh no, I think he changed agencies at some point. And I don't know about Carlson, but yeah, I mean now that you say it, that makes a lot of sense, because again, the situations are totally different. I mean, Carlson was traded because that team was just coming apart at the seams. And, like, he's a free agent. They're not going to sign him, so they had to get rid of him. Pacioretty, I guess, you know, unfortunately was kind of the scapegoat to whatever the previous incarnations of the Habs were, and he was just carrying so much baggage that he also kind of ended up having to leave, and he immediately signed a contract with the Golden Knights and seems totally happy, although his play hasn't really been that great. But like Tavares left as a free agent. He left as a free agent. He signed with another team after 2 years of telling us how much he wanted to stay as an Islander. And he's, again, we talked about it. Like, he's been going through this whole, like, oh, it was such a tough decision and I agonized over it. And at the end of the day, I did the best.
Yeah, he made sure he got that point across again in the story.
Oh, I love that. Like, you know, I have a lot of, fans with, you know, I have a lot of love for the franchise and my friends and blah blah blah, and like nobody's buying it. Nobody buys it. Nobody wants to hear it. Like,
I seriously think like, you know, they were writing this story and about Pacioretty and Carlson, and maybe it's just started out as Pacioretty, and then, you know, whoever is in charge of making sure the Leafs are happy with the Athletic was like, why don't you throw Tavares in there, like, so let's just get a quick temperature check on what it's like in the Islanders. And it's like a scene in a movie when you like open a door and there's still like a fire burning inside, and this person closes the door. He's like, oh, I can't leave that way. Yeah. That's kind of like what it was. It's like, all right, let's just check in. You know, they're actually doing pretty well too. So this can be our count as our, hey, like, pat on the back for the Islanders for getting off to a hot start.
Yeah.
And
that's exactly what it was too. He was like, don't think that John Tavares hasn't noticed how his old friends are playing this year. And he was like, yeah, you know, they got a lot of talent over there. And over, you know. Dude, nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to hear it. They want to hear themselves booing this guy. Now, that being said, there are a lot of Islanders fans out there that are like, hey, you know what? The guy had a chance to move on. The team didn't do enough to keep him. He gave them 9 years and, you know, whatever, 7 all-star teams or whatever it was. And he did his part and he didn't stay. And that's okay. And hey, good luck to you. And that's fine. But like, unless 13,000 of those people all end up at Nassau Coliseum on February 28th, that dude's going to get booed a lot, and it's going to start early in the morning and it's going to continue on at night. And it doesn't matter what place they're in. Doesn't matter the score. It doesn't matter the situation. It doesn't matter. He's going to get booed. He's going to get chanted. He's going to get stuff. If you're a member of John's family, I'm so, so sorry about the things you're going to hear at that game, because I guarantee nobody's ever said that stuff about John Tavares before. He's going to get a bigger cheer at Madison Square Garden than he's going to get at Nassau Coliseum on that game. And this is going to go on for 7 years. If you think people are going to just get it out of their system, you know, 2 games this year, think again. This is going to go on for a long time. And that has nothing to do with how good they are. And it just, you know, I had this problem with LeBron when I was doing the encyclopedia. Like, don't dance around it, dude. Like, just tell us what it is. You can hedge your bets all you want, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. You know what it's going to be like. So just say it.
Yeah. And don't think that he's not going to write a story that week. You know.
Yeah.
They'll probably make like a mini documentary on the Athletic, return.
Wait. Yeah. Oh, it'll be a whole. It'll be a five-part Sportsnet series, and every talking head, they're gonna have like the gauzy filter over it, and the triumphant music. They're gonna get like somebody. They're gonna get Kiefer Sutherland to narrate it or something, and they're gonna make a whole big thing, and he's gonna get booed, and then guess what? What's gonna happen? He's probably gonna score the game-winning goal, and it's gonna be the triumphant thing.
Yeah. Someone will throw a beer at him on the ice, and then it'll be, the flying beers at Nassau Coliseum. Wow, I can't believe they're back at Nassau Coliseum where the flying beer epidemic didn't take too long to come back.
How could the league let this happen? Be a whole thing, you know, and it's going to be a circus. It's going to be a circus from top to bottom. I might book a vacation. I don't know. Get the hell out of the country.
Honestly, I'm really I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm going to go or not, but I'm excited for it a little bit. And just because of that article, like, I want to be like, you know what? Why don't we see how it goes, Pierre?
Yeah.
I'm happy to document the parking lot for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be the guy out there with the barbecue gloves, because there's going to be a lot of burning things out there. That I don't have to touch any of them, pick them up with my bare hands. But yeah, that'll be good. I'm interested to see Barry Trotz's reaction to it, because he's just so even keel. He'll probably make a funny joke and just bust up the whole room and diffuse everything, because that's kind of the guy he is. But anyway, all right, that felt good to get that out. All right, so let's wrap this up real fast. What are we looking at here? So yeah, we got the Lightning on Thursday. Again, the evening you're probably listening to this, they're going to be playing Lightning. 10 o'clock, on the 10th, on Saturday, the game at Florida, they're doing Bill Torrey night, legacy night over at the Panthers game with the Islanders, obviously. So that'll be cool to watch. And then the Islanders will do something for Bill Torrey on December 1st at the Coliseum. So that'll be cool to see. I want to see what they do for Bill Torrey there. And then the Islanders have a couple of days off. And then Tuesday, they're playing the surprising Vancouver Canucks with Elias Pettersson, who's just tearing up the league right now. So that's not a gimme in any sense of the word. And then, oh boy, New York Rangers in Barclays Center, a place they love to play, on Thursday. I'm sure David Quinn is going to try and, you know, be the guy to break that jinx. But, it's an interesting slate of games. No gimmies here. But, again, I feel like they'll play really well against the Panthers. Hopefully Trotz can get them to play well in every one of them. But, I don't know. I think if they can get a point out of Tampa, that's great. I would hope that they can beat Florida. And then you just hold serve at home, and that's probably the best thing you can hope for. But what do you think? Scared?
Yeah. I agree. I think first of all, the over-under on the lowest ticket price for the Canucks game has got to be at like $4.
Probably. Yeah. One of those. I got the thing. I'm sure you've got it too. Buy one ticket, get another for a dime. That's the dime savings bank thing. So, man, if you got a friend and you have a dime, go to the game. You can get tickets real dirt cheap. They're not much more than the dime you're paying for the second ticket. So by all means, go.
And then, that's an interesting spot game, right? You just come off that road trip, and then you got the Rangers 2 days later. So that'll be interesting. Six points out of the eight would be great again. It's another kind of like it's definitely an interesting slate of games. That's a perfect way to put it. You know, you got. Yeah. To one really the cream of the crop, then a team that you'll probably be battling with in the mix for a playoff spot in the Panthers. They'll probably be in the kind of the same tier as the Islanders. Then the Canucks just randomly sprinkled in there in the Rangers.
Whenever I see teams like Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, even the California teams, I'm always kind of secretly hoping that they're playing the Rangers the night before, or the Devils the night before, or the Flyers, or the Bruins, or whoever the night before, to kind of give the Islanders that little extra edge in their game. But it's just a weird mix of teams, you know, good, bad, kind of, you know, teams that are pretty quick, which is a problem. I mean, outside of the Panthers game, these are teams that are generally pretty fast, although the Panthers look pretty fast when they beat the Islanders pretty good the other day. So. At the same time, like, I don't know if they'll win them all, but I'm, having seen what we've seen so far, I think they have a good chance to get points. I don't think they're going to get, like, you know, blown out or swept at all of them. Hopefully I don't end up eating those words. But it should be a pretty interesting slate. And they actually have – they only have two games that week. So they get some rest, which is good too. They had like six games in 10 days, which is kind [S2] Nice. [S1] kind of a rough haul. So, and I guess just looking even further ahead, the 18th 1 o'clock game against Dallas on Sunday. So if you got kids, it might be a good time to go there too. Is that it? I think we talked about a lot of stuff. Colleton, we had some technical issues there that I hopefully – don't end up here on the final version. I think we got everything, right? Did I miss anything?
Yeah. I feel good.
Cool. All right. So why don't you tell everybody your Twitter account again?
It's the Big Lee Basky with two E's.
The Big Lee Basky with two E's. You should follow Mike on Twitter. You should read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. You should leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. I keep forgetting to say that. You should do that because it helps us and people can see us. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for downloading. If you're going to the game tonight in Tampa, enjoy. It should be a good time. I hear they do great work down there, and there's Isles meetups that you should check out if you haven't already. We'll check out that game on Saturday, Bill Torrey night at the Panthers, and we will be back next week. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.